Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It is August 31st, 2017, and this is episode 537. I am your host, James Jones, and with me today is Guillaume Vayette.
Hello.
John Lindemann.
Hey, James. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, John. Yourself?
Great.
Excellent. And Greg Leahy.
Oh, hello, everyone.
And we're just going to get right down to it because the 28th of August, I think, like a bunch of games came out all on the same day, just complete chaos. So we've got lots of stuff to talk about. So we're just going to go ahead and get started. Greg and I have both been playing the same game, and that is Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle plus Cats. I don't know, minus Dogs. I don't know. Very long name. Greg, how far are you into the game so we can figure out who wants to lead the conversation?
I just got done with the second kind of boss, you know, so the second world is down.
Okay, so you're ahead of me, so I'll let you lead off then, because I'm in the second world right now.
Yeah, well, I guess we're not that far apart anyway.
No, but,
yeah. So I've had it for a couple of days, just put enough time in to get that far. For those people who can contextualize how far that is, I don't have an hour count because
it's a couple hours in.
The way the Switch tracks things,
yeah, you won't know for a couple weeks, and then it'll be only in 5 hour increments.
It'll be a while before it gets around to that, but I've been enjoying it so far. Kind of looked at it. I mean, it's got plenty of favorable coverage and all that, but also somebody's kind of enjoyed somewhat similar games, or like Codename Steam and stuff like that. I thought it'd be something I could get into, and I don't have any great affection for the Rabbids, but I don't have anything particularly against them either. As I've said before, the only thing I've ever played with them in is Rabbids Go Home, which was quite fun.
I did. I called the stream I did for this game last night, Kill All the Rabbids, so I think my position on them is pretty well established. So just to give some context, if you've just kind of missed what the game really is, if you've just been kind of watching or looking at the images and I'll be honest, disturbing imagery of Rabbid Beach. It's basically a cover strategy game where, you know, I'm blanking on the XCOM. I mean, it's really heavily XCOM inspired. You have units that have special skills based on what kind of weapons they carry and their secondary powers. So, for example, Seren described, who joined me for a little bit, described Luigi as a sniper. He has good range and he does hard damage, but he's kind of a glass cannon.
He starts with significantly less HP than the other characters.
Yeah.
You can increase that through the skill tree and stuff, and everybody's HP goes up when you do clear a world, but yeah, you know, relative to the other characters, he's always going to be a little bit vulnerable, so you're going to want to kind of stay clear of the enemies and snipe them.
Yeah, Mario needs to get a lot closer, but does a lot of damage, and he has a hammer, Wrecking Crew style, that he can unleash for area of effect skills. Rabbid Peach, god damn it, is a healer. It's just stuff like that. They've got all kinds of different skill sets.
I've got to the point in the game now where I could have a party entirely of actual Mario characters, but it won't let me do that.
Really?
It seems
you must have
rabbit
a rabbit
is required to in the party because it's not Mario plus blank.
it's not Mario Rabbit Exterminator.
So, I think it looks like Rabbid Peach is going to be sticking around in the party because that healing skill is pretty useful, and certainly more useful than the other Rabbids that I've got so far. So,
yeah, I found Luigi Rabbid to be kind of useless.
Yeah, you've used him a lot yet. I don't know whether that will happen, but yeah, so far... My party's mostly been Mario, Luigi, and Peach Rabbit.
Peach Rabbit's healing skills is kind of important because I found early in the game, basically the world is 8 missions, and the missions are split into a non-standard number of acts. Essentially, is acts the word they
describe
it?
Yeah, sometimes there's like multiple skirmishes within that mission, and then therefore your health kind of carries over.
Right.
Although sometimes in between those skirmishes, like you can like do a puzzle or poke around the world and find a mushroom, you know, in the world, and that will partially refill your health for before the next battle and stuff like that.
the ability to heal is so big, because if you just can't heal, sometimes those missions can be really unpleasant. And they do give you like an easy button to kind of get your health back, and I think it also increases the amount of max health you have. But I had a run on the stream where I just got frustrated because there's these big rabbids who have basically it's just a block, because the whole world, the whole Mushroom Kingdom has been just completely screwed up by this.
They have a slab invention. And you kind of, you know, they, if you shoot them, they will immediately start running towards you. So that's where Luigi's really useful against them, because he can shoot them from range and they'll run towards him, but they won't reach him. And then, you know, maybe the other characters could just finish it off and then you won't have a chance to retaliate. And stuff.
There's a mission where you have to eliminate four of them, and two of them start at a low level, which means you can hit them for more damage. And there's a chain chomp down there, and chain chomps are equal opportunity attackers.
Yeah, it's just a force of nature.
If you're close enough, they hit you.
Yeah.
For a lot of damage. And so I was content that the chain chomp do the work, but a bunch of those dudes spawn right next to you. And so you basically have to go down to the bottom floor with the chain chomp and just try to kite it towards the enemies. And it just kind of, it was like, once I realized that's what I had to do, it was fine. But not having any health and not being able to absorb an attack from those things at all really made that mission suck. But yeah, like there's more layers of interaction in the game system than I expected. That enemy in particular, because they move when you shoot them. If you put characters into Overwatch, the Overwatch equivalent, they'll move through that too. So if they start moving and you shoot them, well, they're going to get to keep moving. Their movement range isn't very big, but now you've effectively doubled it. Somebody else overwatches them, they get to keep walking, at which point they hit you with the slab. I ran into some trouble with them, though, because there is the ability to go into this like tactics mode and see everybody's movement range, it's not like a Fire Emblem thing where this is their attack range. It's their movement range. If they can attack, like if the slab is long, so you can hit from some distance, and that messed with me a little bit. But it also can't stay on the screen. Like you can't. It's not like Fire Emblem where you can press a button and just overlay it on the screen and have it stay there.
It's got two sort of discrete, like tactics cam and battle cam or whatever, you know. It's not like as integrated as in something like Fire Emblem.
Yeah, and I kept trying to do that, and I kept trying to read that range as like, this is the range in which I can be attacked, not this is the range in which they can move to attack. And so that was giving me all kinds of grief. But in that mission, Luigi has, I mean, it looks like a rolling vacuum cleaner that he jumps on top of and throws out, and it pursues its enemies. Like you assign it a target and it just follows them around turn after turn, and eventually it will either catch up to them and explode, or somebody will run into its area of effect and it'll explode and it will do damage. It hits pretty hard. And so I was basically having a mission where I had to outrun those things, and I was just dropping them behind Luigi and letting him catch that, and then letting Luigi jump over Mario's head for distance and shoot. Because it would take a couple turns for them to get there, but that let me get close and fire and run away. But it's like, you know, keying up bouncing, like you could bounce from one character to another. The status effects stuff and, you know, Overwatch effects and the ability to have individual characters give passive stat boosts to other characters and all that kind of stuff together. There's more layers to this than I think I was expecting.
No, it's true. I mean, I think the whole team jump, they call it, thing is pretty interesting, because if you kind of chain those together, and especially if you've used the upgrade in on the skill tree, like, you know, I mean, Luigi can do combo team jumps. You know, he can go off eat both of the allies and end up going really far over the map, maybe get up, you know, somewhere onto a good vantage point, which suits his, you know, sniping, build, as it were. And, it's kind of interesting just how much you can traverse in one go if you set it up right and you got the skills and the right party and all that kind of stuff. And then, I guess the biggest difference for me from something like Codename Steam is how much more sort of liberal it is with movement, in terms of you have a range that you can move, but you can, for instance, kind of just like do a circuit in that area, you know, like, so just like, especially with that sliding attack where you just give the enemies a little attack on your way through them.
Yeah.
You could just like, again, Rabbit Peach has the ability to attack like more times, do a dash attack more times than just once if you've upgraded it. You know, and then you could, it's like just to hit three enemies on the run and then just circle back to where you were. You know, if it was a good cover spot. But I guess the exception to that sort of freedom is if the enemies are using Overwatch type ability, because then obviously you're going to get picked off on your right. way around. You know, then you might actually want to stick behind cover rather than do this little tour of chipping away at everybody's health.
And the first boss in the game, and they showed it in some of the stuff, so I'm not so worried about it, is the giant Donkey Kong rabid. There's like weird boss battle mechanics that really only apply to him in terms of doing damage to him, and some situational stuff that he can do that really forces you to kind of learn the stage. But I really only was able to do the kind of damage I wanted to do to him and make it stick and really deal with him with Luigi. So I had to like get Luigi to him, but there was all kinds of stuff that was making that difficult. So I really had to find a way to get everybody in a position to let him jump basically across the stage to where the next place he needed to be to do the work. And that took way longer than I expected it would, and probably that it needed to. But, you know, they took all the weird mechanics the game has and sort of put them into an event fight with very specific and unique circumstances on top of it.
Yeah, because the big thing there, like you said, is that, you know, the being able to traverse, you know, that grid kind of in one turn, because he'll do that attack that sort of bounces you backwards.
Right.
So if you were just like kind of trying to crawl your way up there, chances are you're just going to get it knocked back before you get the channel. Although if you get the right kind of cover, you'll kind of maintain
your
position.
You're not affected by it. But there's also some of your skills that you could use that allowed you to offset that as well. So like one of the status effects is like the barrier skill, and one of the skills was a barrier skill, and that actually allowed you to not be affected by the bounce back. So you still took the damage, but you didn't, your status effects.
Yeah, you didn't move. You got a bunch of different special effects of attacks that both your weapons and the enemy's attacks can do. Like you've got the bounce, you've got the honey, which kind of welds you to the spot, and
yeah,
freeze takes away special abilities and stuff. You know, like, yeah. So you've got
Ice Age.
Dear me.
Oh, that's such a good one. That's such a good one. All these things sort of combining on each other, and I guess there's kind of an elemental system. Certain enemies fall into different types, and some weapons are better against them than others. So, like, one of my first times I bought Mario weapons with the coins you collect based on your performance, and you just kind of find scattered around the stage. Was a gun that impacted rabbits who have springs on their feet that let them jump further. It did more damage to them. And so that mission, like, there was like a bunch
enemy,
of those.
It's like enemy class specific damage, is it? Because you got, yeah. I think there's some weapons that do damage to the rabbits that heal their allies as well and stuff like that.
Yeah, so like there's a lot of stuff in the game that's just different layers of complexity that they sort of put on top of it. But, you know, both you and I are still pretty early in the game. I think there's 8 worlds. So I'm definitely curious to see where this ends up going. It's got a little bit more of a difficulty curve than I expected. It probably could use to have gotten started a little faster. But beyond that, like, it's not the, you know, a walk in the park, to say the least. So yeah, do you have any thoughts you wanted to conclude with on it?
No, I mean, it's interesting, the whole kind of integration with the overworld stuff, you know, because obviously you've got these encounters that take place sort of, you know, there's no real kind of abstraction with it. You know, the actual encounters take place in the same sort of overworld that you're exploring. But in between the battles, you kind of, you are exploring, you're kind of poking around, and just recently, quite a lot of block pushing puzzles. For the other, both like ones that were essential to open up the next part of the world that would lead to a battle, and then some that are kind of, or at least like a component to the puzzle is optional, to get a chest that would, there could give you a weapon that you could buy, or some of these bonuses. You know, they've got soundtracks and, you know, gallery stuff and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, so far it's been, you know, pretty interesting. I've been trying to be thorough poking around, but there's a certain amount of things that you're not meant to be able to deal with the first time through, because you get kind of upgrades with the environment into with regard to pushing blocks and carrying things.
The first thing you get is the ability to move blocks, which just seems absurd, but you know, it is what it is. What's the phrase your little Roomba uses? I haven't learned to do that yet.
Yeah,
which is just literally just move a block around.
So, yeah, for some reason it's been designated as his responsibility, which seems a poor choice considering he doesn't have limbs.
Yo, he's got Mario right behind him. Oh, and not only does he not have limbs, it's not immediately clear that he actually has physical form.
Yes.
He may be more conceptual than he is actual. So, yeah, I mean, I'm having fun with it. I don't know. I feel like the exploring the world is maybe a little bit flat sometimes, pun not intended, because the game world is mostly flat.
It's kind of like, you know, sort of isometric-ish almost. I mean, it's actually fully 3D and all that. You know, it's not faking it with isometric, but they get, you know, it's got that kind of grid-like feel to it, which is natural. Like I said, when the actual battles are embedded on this world, that's right. The way it would be built.
Yeah, it's... I don't know, I kind of think you spend a lot of time in a world, and the aesthetic kind of wore thin. I think that was the ultimate issue, because the first world is very, I mean, besides all the corruption, is relatively plain. But like maybe some more visual variety, because I mean, you spend at least a couple hours in the first stage, so something, I don't know, like there's just something that's not quite right. And also all the Mario characters are slightly off model because Ubisoft made them.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, there's some nice references. I've no, you know, like when you get the red coins, it has the exact sound effect from Yoshi's Island. You know, you get these little challenges where you just got the red coins strewn about a particular area. You've got to get them all, you know, before they disappear, and then that'll give you a gold chest and whatever, you know, weapon in it that you wouldn't otherwise have access to at that point. And then you've got, I think, the Rabid Kong boss fight when the bananas pile up. Like, I think it uses the sound effect of collecting bananas from DKC.
It does.
And the music is a reference to DKC as well. Which, yeah, obviously this is a Kirk Hope. It's so banjo.
There is a riff in the overworld music in World 1 that is literally stolen from Spiral Mountain.
Yeah, and in 2, I got to a point where it sounded like it was going to go into Freeze Easy Peak. Like I'm sure it's a conscious callback. Even aside from like specifics, just the style is unmistakable.
Oh, it's banjo.
The bass lines, the glockenspiel, the strings, like it's all so similar. But now occasionally weaving in something recognizable, like, you know, DK for Rabid Kong, or like Peach's Castle theme for Mario 64 and all that. And it's just kind of cool to hear that style done with actual instruments, it seems like, at least for some of it, which, you know, Rare were one of the better developers at getting something that didn't sound too tinny out of the N64, but it was a long way away from actual instruments back then. But yeah, so it is very much the same style, just kind of to its fullest. Which I assume you get some of that in Ukulele, but I haven't played that.
No, I was kind of taken aback by some of the remixes that show up in Rare Replay. That's actually been the most enjoyable part of Rare Replay, is the remixed music, because it's just like actual instrumentized versions of like Snake Rattle and Roll theme.
Also because you've been playing the Spectrum games.
That's true. Well, the Spectrum is known for its fantastic presentation value.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, you know.
I mean, the games came on cassette tapes, Greg. The music's got to be good.
It's just that's great logic, James. Put it in your car.
You could. And you know what it sounds like? It sounds like a modem's exploding. Oh, it's awesome. But yeah, I think we'll probably have more to talk about next week because I'm going to keep playing this besides the fact that Yakuza Rock of Ages 2 and something else came out. I can't even remember what it is that came out that I also bought. So we'll get to it. We'll have more time with some Mario plus Rabbids. And I want to say one thing, though. Like, I still kind of just wish this was Mario plus Rayman. God damn it. God damn, like I was actively telling myself not to think about it, but still.
I did love the sort of synergy of the fact that we moved on to this after the Sunshine retroactive, which is a game involving Bowser going on vacation.
Yes.
But this time he hasn't taken Junior with him.
There's a line where Peach says something to the extent of, Bowser Jr. is almost worse than his father. It's like, what the fuck does that mean? Keep in mind that the start of the game is her unveiling a giant statue of herself while Toads and Mario just stand there and stare at it, which is like some Kim Jong-un shit.
But the Senate demanded that he stay.
why are they allowing her to build a 60-foot tall statue of herself? What has Peach actually ever done?
It's just, you know, the subjects love him.
It's not the first one either. I'm pretty sure it was her in Super Mario Land 3 Wario Land, right? Who had a statue of herself?
Yeah, so. And Mario had a giant world of Super Mario Land 2 base. So, I mean, maybe it's just egos run rampant in that culture.
It's why democratically elected leaders with term limits are important.
At least Super Mario Run gives you golden statues, but like basically everyone has a statue, even Spike. So.
You'll be glad to know
so there's no taste implied whatsoever.
You'll be glad to know that there was a gun based on Spike in this game.
So, nice.
Yeah.
It's called the What's This Gun? Who's this from? All right,
it's
John.
It's actually got one of those like, spiky bars that they carry and throw as part of the design. It's quite carefully thought out.
It's the most thought anyone's ever given to Spike, including its designer.
Outside of this show, yeah.
So John, what have you been up to?
All right, there were a couple of games at E3 that I played for PS4 from Housemark, and they were Matterfall and Nex Machina, and I picked them both up this week because I think they're both on sale. So Matterfall, they're both really cool. I like them a lot. Matterfall is sort of like reminds me of something like Bionic Commando Rearmed, sort of Shadow Complex, or maybe the 2D parts of Metroid Other M. That kind of, you know, you're a woman who, you know, is in this armored suit that can do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Right.
And because it's Housemarque Games, as Housemarque Games tend to be, it's very arcadey though, so it's not focused on really exploration. It's focused on you know, getting combos up in, you know.
Score attack kind of stuff.
Yeah, score attack, multipliers, that kind of stuff. But it's really good. I like it a lot. There's really not too much to say aside from the fact that if you're kind of into that sort of thing, I think you'll really like it. I think the one I really want to talk about is, but it is Sony exclusive because Sony published it. The one that's more interesting to me is Nex Machina, which is published by Housemarque themselves. So I contacted Housemarque on Twitter to ask them if it was going to come out for Switch, and I received nothing but crickets. But
there you go.
But they are publishing it. So this one actually would be a really, really good fit on Switch because it's sort of an homage to, you know, like Smash TV, those kinds of games, like twin stick shooters.
Yeah.
And so it has that sort of that isometric overview, and the goal is to go through and clear every room of all the enemies. Your enemies are like these kind of insectoid sort of robot enemies. And also, as with many other Housemarque games, you have to save humans as well. Now,
I'm trying to give people some context if the name doesn't ring a bell. Like Outland is probably a game that they would remember. Which came out on the 360 PS3 and Rezogun on the PS4.
Yeah, Super Stardust HD. Now, the team that made Nex Machina is the team that did Rezogun. So, yeah. And they actually did it, I think, with cooperation from Eugene Jarvis, I believe, who did Robotron and Smash TV and all those games.
Yeah.
So he kind of oversaw the project to a certain degree. He definitely had input.
I'm looking at the trailer on Steam, and yeah, they mention him, and it looks like it has a kick-ass opening.
There you go. But does it have the pleasure dome that doesn't actually exist because no one will ever score enough points to get there? Fun fact about the original arcade board of Smash TV, the pleasure dome didn't actually exist.
Oh, no.
They had to add it because people were complaining. They thought no one would ever score that many points.
Yeah, because I think this was actually called Project Jarvis at one point. It was actually called that because they did it. I don't think they met him somewhere, and they were like, hey, do you want to work with us? And he was like, sure. And they never thought he would actually say yes, but he did. So anyways, that's the kind of thing. And of course, it has, like, you know, the voxel style graphics, you know, it has several different modes. You know, it has kind of like an endless mode sort of thing. Not endless. It has actually five stages, but it has like kind of the arcade mode where you can go through the entire thing and see how far you can get. And then it has some online ranking modes where you can play one particular game type and see how far you get, and then it posts your high score. Or you can just do one stage at a time, stuff like that. But I mean, it's really good, and I think that it would be really, really great on the Switch because it would be a really good game to have on the go. So if you have a PS4, definitely pick it up. I think it's on sale right now for like $11.99 or something. It's normally $20. But definitely check it out. I mean, it's worth the money. I mean, it's a good game to, you know, throw on, play for 20 minutes, and that's it. It's a really good game.
Fun fact about Eugene Jarvis. If you're familiar with the arcade company, makes arcade games now that mostly appear in like pizza places, Raw Thrills Inc. They make the Fast and the Furious game and Big Buck series and all that crap. He actually is the owner and founder of it. And one of their first games, Target Terror.
Oh, yeah.
Bringing it back.
Oh.
Cool. All right, Guillaume.
Yeah. What do you want me to do?
I want you to talk about some Mario Kart 8.
So I got Mario Kart 8 off the library again. I'm making a heavy use of that service now that games cost $80 in Canada. Yeah. And it's just like, I feel like, I don't know, like I feel like I really didn't think it through when I bought everything kind of digital on the Wii U, because I thought, my thinking was, well, Mario Kart, that's something you want all the time on your system so that you can boot it up without really, you know, putting any effort. Like, it's just something that you pick up and play. But I guess I should have thought that, oh yeah, like maybe I'm not going to want to play this Mario Kart forever. Or this version, like on this system.
Maybe you want to play this Mario Kart forever on a different system?
Yeah, exactly.
Because there'll never be another one after that.
So I've been playing Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, and it's weird because it's a very good game. I'm enjoying it. I jumped straight into the multiplayer online, and I was doing pretty good initially, I think probably because at the beginning, they put you against, you know, mostly people also starting out. And most people...
Because of the scores, the VR or whatever it is.
Yeah, and most people who are starting out probably didn't have a Wii U. So, like, I had an advantage because I already knew the tracks. And so I was doing really well. But already, like, I've only got like 1600 points, and already like the competition is pretty fierce. And it doesn't help that sometimes people on my friends list just jump in my game and just wreck me. really, really not helping.
You were the one that used to piggyback on the Karen's thing,
I know.
To wreck.
I'm gonna have to do that again, I suppose. I'm gonna have to create a fake account and just kind of hide from my friends when I'm playing Mario Kart online.
What goes around comes around.
Or else you're gonna have to like win trade or something like that.
Probably not gonna. But that's too much effort. That's way too much effort. But yeah, it's a good Mario Kart. The thing is, though, like I really don't want to be. Yeah, I guess I'm going to give Mario. I'm going to give Nintendo a chance to at least give me some sort of like my Nintendo discount on it before I pick it up.
You're going to give them the chance to give you
those,
a discount.
Those Switch rewards are coming soon, goddammit. They'll be coming soon for 6 months.
It's going to be so worth it.
I'm going to give you a brief aside. Don had a little upset moment on Twitter because the Japanese Club Nintendo Rewards is removing wallpapers. Presumably because they sold out.
Oh, is that the Japanese or is it the...
Just remember, the Club Nintendo Rewards suck everywhere.
Yeah. So what you're telling me now is that like 50 platinum points or whatever they are that would have gone to good use won't and probably just expire now. So that's...
They'll definitely just
literally
expire.
My platinum points. Tough. I've exchanged my platinum points for coins in Super Mario Run so that I could populate my entire Mushroom Kingdom with spike statues. So that's...
And you see what
you're,
are you saying
you're
that's
a worse
not...
monster than Club Nintendo.
Are you saying that's not good use?
Yeah, well, it's the best use I could think of. So that says something. But I'm enjoying it on the Switch. It's kind of remarkable to be playing that like anywhere, to bring it anywhere. But at the same time, I'm not too interested in the battle mode. I'm not sure if I'm ever gonna fire it up. Like it was not a, you know, kind of a milestone for me, or that's the wrong word, but you know, I didn't have that experience with playing the N64 battle mode, you know, in college dorms.
I didn't either. I still enjoyed this one because there's the ease of getting into games and, you know, how well it's kind of done. But it's probably the best battle mode they've done for somebody who's not like, you know, really into it and is going to like, you know, have dedicated gatherings for that purpose.
Right.
You know, you can kind of experience it and get quite a lot of the fun out of it in a more casual way, just booting up and going into online games and stuff. But, you know, I'm not a huge battle mode guy either, so it was never going to have big lasting appeal. So there's a limit to it.
Yeah, so I'm in it for the racing, and the racing is still good, but the whole double items thing is a double-edged sword, because when you're in first, it's really, you only have to worry about second place and about blue shells. And so you've got it pretty easy, but as soon as you fall behind, if you're in the middle of the pack, forget it. Like, I don't know, it's ridiculous sometimes, like getting hit by 2-3 red shells in a row and then bumped off the course by someone using a mushroom.
It's amped the chaos back up, you know, because that was, you know, right, you got 12 people.
Mm-hmm. It's Smash Brotherized battle mode.
It was just going back to where, you know, because we had 12 races, but then Mario Kart 7 went back to 8. And then you go up to 12 again, but then because of the item restrictions, it wasn't quite as anarchic as you might have been expecting. Yeah. Now it's back to the full anarchy, which, you know, it can go either way. It can be very amusing at times. It can be infuriating at times. Mm. Generally, you know, if I'm just... that sort of thing for me is a bigger issue, as I've said many times, in the single player experience. If you're just online, you know, fooling around, you know, you're not like racing four races in a row to get the... to get a trophy or something, like, I'll take the rough with the smooth. If it all goes tits up in one race, who really gives a shit? But, and sometimes you'll benefit from it, so, you know, it evens out. But, yeah, with the one-player stuff, it's just, I mean, the one-player game is just so, like, a non-issue in this, because you don't even have to unlock anything, really. It's just all there.
Right.
You know,
car parts, but you can unlock them by playing the multiplayer anyway. So.
Yeah, by playing anything, you just get coins for, you know, just playing the game.
Yeah. So, no, it's pretty cool. And, 2 days ago, I had the experience of, I went to see a movie with a friend, and my friend brought his Switch and a copy of Mario Kart 8, so managed to do some, you know, impromptu Mario Kart multiplayer before a movie, so that's pretty cool. It was not the most comfortable thing in the world. Like, he had the Switch kind of just lying flat on a satchel on his knees, like, you know, sitting in the theater. So, like, yeah, we had to crane our necks. And I'm going to blame my losses on the fact that I was not, you know, directly in front of the screen, because I've got no shame. But yeah, it was cool. It was cool. So the Switch is cool. I'm looking forward to, you know, more original Nintendo games for it, I suppose. Or some, you know, some incredible My Nintendo discounts.
Well, so speaking of things that will never happen, actually, let's talk about something that will happen, which is Nintendo had their indie game of video it tied to the PAX West event. Yesterday, in the middle of the day, very convenient for everybody. It's about 20 minutes of just basically one indie game either announced or shown for the first time in a while after another. And I wanted to give everybody, have you had a chance to see it?
Sure.
Yeah.
I watched all the trailers.
I guess I will go ahead and just ask, like, what a, everybody has something that stood out to them. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a game. It could be,
well,
know,
it's
an also
observation. The thing is, mine's a cheat because it's not, you know, what was in there, but what wasn't.
All right.
With Runner 3 going to next year. That was the one I was kind of looking for, you know, from back when it was announced, you know, early in the year, looking forward to those. So I played a ton of Runner 2 on Wii U when I first got that system. So I was kind of thinking it was going to be very much the same thing, but yeah, it looks like it's going to be like really much a whole year after the system came out now.
Yeah. And of course we were warned ahead of time that it wasn't going to be there, although it seems to be wrapping up, and that was Stardew Valley, which is still coming. We were informed that it's on its way, it's very close. But yeah, that
right, that's being quality checked or something.
Yeah, allegedly. Hmm. So I'm gonna take this one off the board right away because it's too much of a cheat. Suda showing up and going off and talking about No More Heroes 3 or Travis Returns or whatever. Travis Strikes Again, No More Heroes, which is Travis basically invading various indie game worlds. And so the example one they had was Hotline Miami.
Right.
So he basically was killing the boss of Hotline Miami in a No More Heroes style game. It's fucking nonsense.
So, you know, I didn't play No More Heroes 2, in which the whole open world kind of BS and jobs got converted into like pseudo games or whatever.
Yeah, like they're like mini games, effectively.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is how connected? How like is it kind of an evolution of that? Do we think?
We know very little about this game. All we know is the concept, and the fact that Travis's voice sounds different, and that like you like my immediate reaction to it was just like, Suda, you fucking nerd. But like in the most affection possible, this, I have to take this one off the board because it doesn't feel like an indie game because Marvelous is involved and all that stuff, but I think Marvelous owns the character, so they may have to be involved. And it's, of course it's got lots of indie game content in it. To me, the great fascination is the person who I don't remember who it was, said online that this is his attempt at making a Kingdom Hearts game, which the idea of Suda making a Kingdom Hearts game actually excites me. But B, that like all the games that could show up as the also indie games in here is kind of like just fascinating to think about. So there's got to be an indie game that would let you put let them put Travis Touchdown in its world. This is a guy who charges up his light sword that he bought off the internet by basically masturbating it. So,
Limbo.
What was that?
Limbo, we're thinking.
Yeah, there we go.
Seems to fit tonally.
Typo Man, that's probably going to be in there. yeah, like I'm not sure where we go with this, but it could be really stupid in the most, like, what I want out of a No More Heroes game is just stupid. I want it to be dumb and ridiculous and asinine and juvenile. And I want it to be made by a big fucking nerd. And it is. And I want him to own that. And so, like, the prospect here is this could be really fantastic. Or it could be terrible. And it could be terrible in great ways, or it could just be terrible. So
I feel like we could record that entire soundbite and play it for so many games that you like.
Yeah, oh, totally. Like, there's a reason.
I want it to be stupid.
No More Heroes is actually good, though.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, there are parts of No More Heroes that are good. There are parts of No More Heroes that are terrible.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, the quote-unquote open world stuff.
Yeah, there's some shit in No More Heroes.
Oh, yeah, sure, but
I don't have great memories of that. It could be kind of filler stuff, and you know, there's an ironic quality to it and all that, but that doesn't absolve it of taking up your time.
To me, like, the stuff that it did badly is not the stuff that bothers me. You know, like, I've got my pet peeves, and it was not really hitting those.
Yeah, but I've always wanted to go to the second one because that supposedly, you know, dialed that back, you know, with these sort of, you know, pixel art games or whatever that are substituted for them, and was more about the brawling stuff, but I never did get around to it.
No, certainly. I only played with it a little bit. Gion, what about you?
Well, I'm also a No More Heroes fan, so I was pretty surprised to see that trailer, and I really enjoyed it.
Are you telling me you forgot the ironclad promises that were made 6 months ago, whatever it was?
I'm not entirely sure what he promised.
Just that it was something that existed, but I don't think...
Wasn't even that. He said he wanted to bring Travis to the world of professional wrestling, which we didn't, because there's no mention of professional wrestling in this at all.
It was aspirational.
I want Travis. So he mentioned strong style wrestling, and then he mentioned a venue in which they often hold wrestling events, and said he wants to bring Travis to that world, and none of that is involved in this game.
Yeah, so the stuff that jumped out at me is that they fixed the title of Hidden My Game by Mom, which, you know, I think it kind of loses its... You know, it takes away some of its charm a little bit, you know, like, so one of my favorite, like, movie memories is watching Shaolin Soccer with bad English subtitles. And, you know, I never want to see the good version, like the correctly translated version ever. So, you know, it's kind of the same situation here, but that's supposed to be a good game. So
you would love the TV edit of Scarface.
Oh my God.
Does he talk about flour a lot? Like,
he talks about chickens getting plucked. Yes. Among other things.
This is pretty good.
The city is like one big chicken waiting to be plucked.
Yeah.
I see. They showed a lot of games, and so
diversity in them too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some random. I mean, you mentioned Mom Hid My Game. Like, that's some experimental shit that you would have expected to see in maybe like Made in Wario or whatever that.
Right.
Like, it's really weird.
Sure.
But then you had something like what was it? Yono and the Celestial Elephant, which is a more traditional game that they just put an elephant in.
Yeah, like it's kind of a Zelda-ish game where you're pushing blocks and opening chests and getting you know, pieces of art and talking to people, picking up chickens, and it's incredibly cute, and it's all in the isometric view. So it looks like it could be that classic Zelda fix, and I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, like, just the like Floor Kids, I'm not sure if I'm gonna play that, but like, it's some sort of breakdancing video game, so and it's got a lot of style, so I
was wondering if that was gonna be John's game.
It was on my list indeed. I listed it as a game after my own heart.
I watched it, and it, like, I watched the trailer again after the video was over, because there was like three or four I was like, what the fuck was that? I need to go back and watch it. I still don't have a great feel for what you do. It sounds like you put it together a breakdancing crew.
I'm not too sure exactly what the overarching theme is, but I mean, it has all the legitimate, you know, breakdancing moves in there.
Oh yeah. And so it's certainly a thing. What else was on your list, John?
Morphe's Law, I thought looked really weird.
Oh, is it really?
I'm a big shooters fan.
Are you going to steal mass from my butt?
I guess, yeah.
John, why don't you explain it real quick? Because like this one needs to be explained.
Okay, so for this one, you're placed in this arena, and each team has a statue version of themselves. And really, your goal overall is to make your statue by the end of the game taller than the other teams. And the way you do that is by stealing mass from other players by shooting them. So if you shoot a player in the head, their head gets smaller, your head gets larger.
And your statue grows.
Exactly. And so what happens by the end of the game is it's actually the better off your team is doing, the larger their avatars are, which makes it harder to go into rooms, get through doorways and stuff like that. And the other team, they are smaller, so they're faster. So that's the way it kind of maintains that sort
of... It's kind of a rubber banding kind of mechanic, isn't it, built into it, you know, that it's not going to just get totally out of hand straight away. I mean, it's funny. It's kind of like you've got... you know, that's definitely, you've got to say there's a Splatoon influence there in terms of you've got this kind of overall objective for the team.
Right.
You know, rather than having the most turf covered in a turf war here, it's about having the most mass at the end of it. But also kind of that little bit of that kind of Mario Kart, like, you know, sort of trying to balance the pack component to it as well. So, you know, but aesthetically, it's not something you might identify as being like particularly tilted towards the Nintendo players or something, but it's, I think mechanically it's, you know, kind of looks like it is trying to reach out that way.
There's a vague like robotic Dia de los Muertos like vibe going on. It's kind of a weird art style.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea though that, and they had it in the trailer, that like because the individual body parts grow and shrink, like you can have a giant head and a tiny body running around.
Yeah, and you can apparently, as your body mass changes, it gives you access to different powers and stuff like that. So
yeah, that game's going to be stupid.
Yeah.
Like in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm. And the other game on my list was Nine Parchments. It's by Frozen Byte, who also did Has-Been Heroes. It looks cool.
And Trine.
Like, yes.
Didn't they actually say it was ostensibly like
it is in the Trine
same
world. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
It's a little bit like what was that game where you controlled wizards?
Magicka.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Magicka in the Trine world from the looks of it.
Yeah, but maybe Dungeon more crawler. Simplified because I mean, like mostly what I saw in the trailer was like fire and ice powers, but it did look like maybe you combine them in some way, so like with other players.
Yeah, it looks neat.
Yeah, four-player co-op, so it should be pretty cool. Kind of like it looks like sort of a gauntlet kind of Diablo sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm down.
I will say the thing that surprised me more, like, you know, games like Mulaka look interesting. I don't know if it'll be good, but it, like, I was surprised by the number of games and by the number of them that were, like, launching first on Switch or were Switch is the only platform. Like, they didn't say launch. They just said coming to Switch or coming for Switch or in some cases, like, this is a Switch game.
Hmm.
I'm a little surprised at how in there they got on some of these.
Do you think they should have had something saying exclusive every time?
Well, yeah, like font exclusive and then like 74 asterisks next to it. Yeah, it'll be great. but like, you know, Golf Store is exclusive on Switch. Mom Hid My Game
you better believe I'm interested in that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love golf games. More classic style golf games.
And it's got a freaking like Game Boy Advance
Golf. Oh, they know what they're doing. They know what they're
very
stealing.
Very direct. Yeah. Right? But then there's all this like, you know, adding weird like traits to your shots, like it can skip over water or all this kind of stuff. Like you have sort of more like the
it's
sort of RPG kind of components actually feeding into the gameplay more than just making your stats better. Like it's you know, it looks interesting. And of course the big one is SteamWorld Dig 2.
Yes.
Well, you know, they're coming soon as well. You know, I've been waiting for that for a while, but should be, you know, I think a lot of people have been looking forward to that.
But to finish the thought, like the Meat Boy sequel is launching on Switch first. You know, basically Golf Store is exclusive. Floor Kids, Wolverblade is first on Switch. Polybridge is console exclusive this year on Switch.
Exclusive.
Yeah, like I was surprised how much stuff, you know, people like they had arranged to have, you know, exclusive access to. Yono and the Celestial Elephant is exclusive on consoles. Dragon Mark for Death is exclusively on Switch and 3DS. Like, I didn't...
Oh, yeah, that was interesting, the Inti Creates thing. Right? Yeah. That was, you know, interesting. Could we see what they...
Well, Dragon Mark for Death got announced like 75 years ago. Like, it feels like that game has been in development since before we were born.
That and, God damn it, Kentucky Route Zero has been in development forever. Like, it's like an episodic game. Yeah, it's an episodic game, and I think the first episode came out maybe over 2 years ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. The launch on consoles is the finished full game.
Nice.
Dragon Marked for Death was announced, and then Inti Create was founded 20 years later. Like, that game has been around forever, and it's actually seeing it in action. Like, there is a moment where it's like, okay, maybe this is the Mega Man Zero sequel that I've always wanted, or maybe it's another Gunvolt game. We'll see, but yeah, I'm always have that moment there of like, okay, maybe, maybe.
And there sure was a lot of co-op and, you know, multiplayer games like Sausage, what are they called? Sausage?
Sausage Sports Club.
Yeah. And anyway, like, clearly the Switch.
It was multiplayer, Battle Chef Brigade, Dragon Mark for Death.
Yeah.
Most of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm really enjoying that. Like, it's just like last generation, like the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360. I remember developers like seeing interviews like, yeah, we're not doing, you know, well, yeah, the games would forego having couch co-op. Like, there was sometimes like you'd wonder, like, why did I buy a second controller? And that sure seems to have turned around, at least on the Switch.
Especially in the indie space. Yeah, and I think maybe some of that is just the cost of having to maintain servers if you're not on a platform that does that for you.
And you know, this time also, like, the indies, I guess, like, we're talking about indies, but I think they're slightly bigger studios maybe than they used to be on XBLA.
Like, some of this stuff is from companies that historically, I mean, they're developers who have been around a while. They would just historically have a publisher tied to their game. Like, IndieCreates historically wouldn't publish their own stuff when they had to make, you know, physical releases. Somebody else would publish them, or they would be contracted to make them.
Right. So the, you know, you've got couch co-op or multiplayer and online for a lot of these. So that's also exciting.
Yeah. It was a nice little midweek event, and it didn't happen on the day of our podcast for once, thank God. Thank you, Nintendo. Thank you for giving us time to process. But with that, we are going to wrap up this little news/new business package that we've put together, because when we come back, it'll be time for listener mail. Stay tuned. And we're back. Listener mail time. We haven't had a listener mail segment in a couple weeks because of our internment on Isle Delfino. So if you've forgotten how to send us an email, you can send it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and we will read it on the show. I can't promise you we'll read it on the show, because, you know, if you send us an email and it's just the word garbage typed 135 times, I'm not going to make John read that. It tantalizing as that sounds.
I would read it in the context of Epic Dumpster Bear.
Oh, God. Okay, that's time to get moving then. All right, so I will read our first email. I can't remember. Stefan, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. Yes, Stefan from Seattle asks, "Hello, RFN crew. With the impending release of the most unlikely crossover that surprised no one when it was finally announced at E3, I have to wonder, is the Plus Rabbids title ripe for expansion into other franchises? I certainly hope so. What other video game universes do you guys think are currently on the verge of a pending Rabbids crossover invasion? Will Microsoft let Ubisoft make the Halo Plus Rabbids mystery puzzle a la Layton game that we never wanted but would totally play? Will we finally see the glorious nightmare that would be Persona Plus Rabbids Kart Racer, featuring our titular furry heroes disguised as Japanese teenagers driving weaponized demon penis mobiles through the streets of Tokyo? Let me know what you want to see next in this beautiful, twisted, budding franchise." Cheers.
This whole email is more about him than about us.
Oh, this is
what he wants to hear us say.
But you know what? Like I included it in part because I want to, you know, show the broad spectrum of our deranged listener base. Mm-hmm. And so I'll go ahead and give you my first suggestion. And it is, we've kind of already had some hints of this a little bit. So it's not too far of a stretch, but I really think Nobunaga's ambition plus Rabbids is sort of prime.
Rabbids conquest, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, they did the Nobunaga's ambition Pokemon, but they really kind of took the gameplay down a little bit. I'm thinking more in the, and maybe Nobunaga's ambition isn't the tech or the Koei franchise to go with, maybe Romance of the Three Kingdoms plus Rabbids. Because I really want to get deep tactical understanding.
They have that time machine.
It's true.
You know, the washing machine thing. So,
yeah. So, because, I mean, if you've ever played a Romance of the Three Kingdoms game, don't. But basically, it's this really, like, really unnecessarily convoluted game where you have to manage your kingdom and also wage war on the other kingdoms in ancient China set during the Warring States period. And, you know, a lot of times you're doing things like sending horses as tributes to local other kings to try to, you know, win favor over and arranging trade routes. And I think the Rabbids have a really good sense for managing the trade of millet rice. I think they'd be excellent at it. And I would love to see their contribution to the development of agriculture and industry in, you know, the Three Kingdoms period, China. I think that'd be really a really solid foundation for them to really show what they're made of. Who wants to go next?
The Last of Us plus Rabbids. Because if there's one thing that's supposed
to be, we really are the last of us
to me,
and Rabbids.
It's Rabbids, and I can't think of anything better than being able to craft my own like spiked bat to hit a rabbit with.
Oh man. I mean that's pretty much Rabbid canonical already though, so you're in place.
I really don't know. Like, aren't we beyond parity at this point? Like, isn't Assassin's Creed is showing up in Final Fantasy? Like, that's everything like, is possible, and it's I don't know.
But you know that's almost like B tier because the Final Fantasy 15 is such a is literally gone games as a service. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a little in our planning email. I mentioned that I watched Kingsglaive to get ready to play 15, and it's fucking atrocious. But like every week, there's some new thing they've announced. We're adding an online multiplayer to Final Fantasy 15. Create your own character. It's like what? Because they've got a lot of money to make back. In Europe today, they released the Nissan Cup Noodle helmet for Noctis. Like anything can happen in Final Fantasy 15. So. Final Fantasy 15 plus Rabbids is really just around the corner.
The one I thought of was, you know, what franchise is getting ubiquitous with Nintendo these days? Fire Emblem. Oh. Fire Emblem plus Rabbids, but inspired by what I said earlier about the fact that you have to have one of the Rabbid characters in your party
at all times.
The Kingdom Battle. Yeah, so you can only do the kids thing with a Rabbid.
Oh God!
Yeah,
oh,
so yeah,
Jesus.
That's the only way you can get a kid in this particular game. It's gotta be, you know, Crom and you know, Rabbid.
So right now I'm sitting on the title of Rabbid's Bestiality is our episode title. So if you all better make something funny happen before I make that the episode.
I mean, I think it would sort of satisfy both people, you know, in terms of, well, you know...
What people would we be satisfying
The people
this?
Who are sort of pro the relationship stuff in Fire Emblem games are the people who are against. The people who are against are clearly, they've recognised that it's an abomination that's diluting the game, and they've said, screw you to all these people that are just in it for the sort of, you know, anime kind of relationship part of it. For the other people, it's like, well, it's still in the game. You can still get to S rank and still have a character that inherits the traits of the two progenitors. So,
oh God,
what have you really
got
lost?
Rabbit ears and buck teeth.
Yep,
and just communicate. Nah.
Yep. Yep. Those support conversations would be stellar.
I like the idea of them saying we're finally making a new Advance Wars game, but it's all Rabid themed.
you could have like Pikmin, where the Rabbids are the Pikmin instead, and basically they don't follow order, so it's just like a random number generator.
So it's
game.
it's like Pikmin 1 and 2 then.
they're out harvesting stuff, and instead they just throw it into a river and walk away.
They just fall behind and never really they're lost forever.
That's it. But just think, you know, whereas when you lose Pikmin it's heartbreaking, in this it'd be like, well, you know, that was funny at least to see them.
I rid myself of them.
Emperor Bolt Blacks or whatever.
Put them in Animal Crossing.
They just torch the town.
Mm-hmm.
My mind went the same place as John, really, because what if like Rabbids and Dead Rising? And I'm thinking specifically of Rabbids Go Home, where it was kind of a Katamari Damashi. What is that called again? Anyway,
Katamari Damacy.
So you know where you pick up stuff and you're trying to get the most stuff possible in the level, and so maybe like with your shopping cart you just steal everything and then you get to Frank West, who then you know creates weapons out of what you've gotten, and then you know goes through the level in reverse order to shoot everyone, or you know everyone's been turned into zombies. I don't know.
What if it's exactly the same game, but they just replace all the zombies with rabbits?
Also, I mean, like, didn't that start as like Killer Freaks from Outer Space? Like, isn't
it did?
There? Yeah. So obvious. Yeah, like at some point, violence
that didn't
was
start
involved.
As Killer Freaks.
Zombie U
started as Killer Freaks.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and we thought they were rabbits when we saw them because I was actually at the event where they showed it off. I was like, those look like rabbits, but like infected. And they're like, no, no, they're aliens. They're not rabbits. We don't have this. Isn't a rabbits game, even though this is Ubisoft. It's like, okay, sure.
So
just like
maybe
the Simpsons were in no way just Matt Groening's rabbit characters.
That's right,
redrawn.
So maybe, you know, in keeping with the zombie theme, what about, like, Telltale's The Rabbids and Walking Dead? You just have to make, you know, important, decisions.
It's your choices are rah and rah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Rabbit and Negan will remember.
Rah.
Right.
Yeah,
the rabbit with a funnel in its head will remember that and all of that stuff.
So what they could do, though, is they could use them to explain why their engine still sucks in the year of our Lord 2017. Like, oh, well, the rabbits are inside. They're messing with it. That's why the performance is shit in Batman. What if we took something like I'm trying to think of what game, you know, would really sort of take on an air of the nobility that the rabbits represent, you know, the regal kind of representation of video gaming sort of at large, and what franchise really needs an injection. And I come to myself and ask, oh, it's gonna be Capcom. What franchise could they fuck up by putting rabbits in it? And the answer is all of them.
Right.
So I'm actually anticipating Street Fighter 6 is just Street Fighter plus rabbits, and the only character you get for free is rabbits, and you have to earn all the other characters with $27,000 of fight money.
Well, you know that they have shown up in fighting games, haven't they?
Probably.
Yeah, like the Turtles smash up.
Oh god, yeah.
At least some sort of costume. Like
fighting,
you can get
games.
Right. I think you can unlock like a Splinter Cell rabbit or something.
Jesus Christ.
I wish I were making that up.
Hey guys, the Splinter Cell got really dark late in the 360 generation. Like really dark. Like really kind of like some fucking 24 stuff. Back when 24 was like, you had a 60% chance of dying if you showed up on episode 24. What if they just remade the last couple ones, the really dark ones, with just all the characters as rabbits? They wouldn't even need to sign any other licenses. It's just Ubisoft and Ubisoft. Sam Fisher as a rabbit, torturing potential terrorists who are also rabbits. I think it's really going to go far for their brand potential. And we'll take care of the people thinking rabbits are just too childish. But on the image of horrible rabbit torture, let's move on to the next email. Greg, why don't you go with this one?
Sure. Ben C. from Detroit, Michigan writes, hey RFN dudes, with the possible inclusion of esports in future Olympic Games, will we see Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games as an event in Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games? Is the Switch even powerful enough to run an infinite chain of M&S at the Olympics nested within each other? Also, which Mario / Sonic character do you think will test positive for Adderall and be disqualified if esports are included as an event? I wasn't aware that anyone from Mario and Sonic played in the Seahawks secondary there, Ben. But
so Adderall is big in the esports community too, apparently.
Yeah.
So Charmy B is the answer for who's going to be high on performance drugs. Like,
what, not big the cat.
No, Big the Cat is on like Quaaludes. But like, Charmy B is the one who's gonna just be just injecting whatever into like under his eyeballs, and just I need to go all the time. I've got to build a hive, and also I need to get the top score on that fucking dressage game that we've got in Mario and Sonic at the Olympics. I do like the idea of infinite regression, Mario and Sonic at the Olympics.
Yes, infinite regression is always good. Like the Konami value box art for Dawn of Sorrow.
The Hall of Mirrors, look as it slowly spins into oblivion. Yeah. It would be interesting though to as a computer scientist to see like what would happen if you just kept asking it to process itself and see how far you go before you just crash the Switch. It's like just complete trolling me shuts down the Switch and we just have all kinds of disasters. Like, maybe you're playing somebody playing the dressage game who's being played all the way up, and they just remap the controls at every tier of that gameplay. Like, at one point you're just controlling their hands, at one point you're controlling the person going to the game to pick it up and play it. It just layers itself back until the controls become sort of an Ouroboros of just button presses that do all kinds of dumb shit.
Well, remember with the whole, you know, infinite universes thing, it's got to be one where that is happening.
There you go. Somewhere,
and furthermore, one where that is the cause of a like Skynet style eradication of the human race.
Infinite regression of chaotix trying to play
is what in the end, you know, means doom for us all. I think that's probably not one of the worst universes.
No, there's definitely some worse ones out there. There's one out there where people like Sonic 06, and that's the worst universe. I do briefly the Olympics at the esports thing, or around esports at the Olympics thing, since we're here, we may as well touch on it. This whole thing's been kind of a cluster, at least from my perspective at this point, because like, we can't do violent games because it's not what the Olympics are about. Which I guess leaves sports games and racing games, but I mean, John, you play a lot.
Boxing games.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. That would never be in the Olympics.
Yeah.
No fencing. No judo. No karate. No.
Which rules out Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games? So.
That's right. Yikes. They just can't play that event.
They can only do the dressage.
John, you have more experience.
Right, have more legitimate merit as a sport than actual dressage.
Oh God, you have a little more experience with those kinds of games though than I do. Like my concern, I've never seen anybody really give me an answer to this. Is those games continue to change every year and they just keep coming out? Like, wouldn't that be kind of weird as an event like that? It seems like a weird venue for it.
I mean, it really depends on the game. I mean, some games stay relatively the same, like Counter-Strike stays relatively the same.
Those are out. Like, they basically said it's like, it can't be the violent. That doesn't go to the spirit of the Olympics.
Yeah.
So I guess your racing games are largely the same. I don't know. It just feels weird because, like, they're going to go away at some point because the platforms change. I don't know. But, like, then again, we have, what's the event where it's like run, walk, shoot, and swim and some dumb shit
Yeah. So like the special, I remember, I know what you want. The modern pentathlon, is it?
Yeah, because that was what some French guy in 1900 thought a modern gentleman should be able to do.
So, which is like ridiculously antiquated now. So yeah, I mean, like there's nothing that doesn't there's nothing to preclude something being in because it's outdated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. My thought on it was it just felt like they saw their viewership demographics and said like we need to hit demographics that care about esports, like younger male audience.
Yeah, I mean they're getting really really big audiences, much bigger than you would expect. I mean that's the thing. I mean it really depends. It depends on the game. I mean you could probably do maybe StarCraft. League definitely is huge. Counter-Strike. I mean, they have, I mean, you know, they have, the target shooting and stuff in the Olympics. So I don't know. I don't know about the whole violence thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it only applies when it needs to apply. This is the Olympics, John. Remember honesty and bribery. Honesty is good. Bribery is bad, but.
Right. Right.
But if you will give us $40 million, you know, we'll talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think this stuff should probably just, you know, stay in the X Games. I think that makes more sense, but
yeah, it feels like a weird fit. And that's kind of why I thought maybe the Olympics are just like they're just saying like, well, there's an audience here we can try to get and show. And it plays well in countries in big population countries specifically, you know. Mm-hmm. Plays well in China. Plays well in the US, you know, East Asia in general. It plays well.
Yeah.
And so in Europe, so maybe it almost feels like we're targeting markets where we can get TV revenue out of it.
That's exactly it. I think that has a lot to do with it too. And, you know, and that's the thing. I think that a lot of the Olympic Games now, they probably feel like they're not really connecting with these audiences that watch a lot of stuff streaming online.
Right.
You know, they're kind of old school in that sense where, you know, well, when they're on, where do you watch them? You don't really watch them online. You watch them on normal cable TV.
Except you can't because they're all on tape delay. Fucking
yeah,
NBC.
They're held at like 5 a.m. your time or something.
So you'll get to watch Mario and Sonic Infinite Regression on a 17-hour tape delay because it was being played in Sydney.
Yep.
Fuck you, NBC. So I do want to say, though, that we're speaking about the modern pentathlon briefly. To give you an idea of how antiquated it is, it was by a guy who has the title Baron, despite the fact that he's French, which doesn't seem like any... and he wasn't born, like, in the 1600s. He was born in, like, the mid-1800s. Oh, it's so good. Oh, it's so good. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Like, it just feels like a weird fit.
Yep.
But if it gets us Mario and Sonic at the Olympics, then you know what, we'll deal.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's a win-win.
It's a win-win. If it gets us, how,
I don't
you know
even
what?
Really
no.
know who the two antagonists are in that equation, but you know, whatever.
No one. What if they have to play the old U.S. Gold Olympics games though? Like
that.
That's a lose-lose.
Now
lose
you're
for
talking
everybody.
My language.
Yeah, that's because those games, as you would expect from the U.S. Gold mark of quality, are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Gold, the only publisher so bad that they had to put another country that they don't operate in its name in the title so people wouldn't come looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we've given ourselves enough opportunity to talk about stuff that only we care about. Let's go to the next email, John.
All right, Brian writes, "Hey, RFN crew, love the show and finally thought of a good question to ask after giving up the insanity that has become the current state of Marvel and DC Comics. It seems that in the past, companies like Sega and Rare had plans for multiple games that would all take place in a shared universe, but both failed due to changes at the company. Will any developer ever succeed at creating a shared universe with interconnected storylines and crossovers, and if so, would it be an existing or new developer? Note that despite the existence of Super Smash Bros., Nintendo's games are not an example of a shared universe, but rather an example of a shared multiverse, meaning that while there are crossovers, none of them are ever really meaningful or hold weight as canon."
I think that Mario Kart is pretty canon. I'm sorry. I don't know. Like, I don't know where you...
It doesn't even look like Mario. Link doesn't even look right.
Yeah, well, that's how he looks in Mario's World. What can I say?
Oh, my God. So there is an answer to this. Like, there's a real answer. There's there companies who have done this. I don't know if anybody here has a guess on what I'm thinking of. There's two specific ones.
Is it Mr. Driller?
No.
Oh, yeah, the whole Namco arcade thing that was talked about on Retronauts recently, yeah. That's like, right. Turns out, yeah, they kind of retconned, to use the lingo of this sort of thing, a bunch of arcade games to be in the same universe and characters are related and
you
know, generational gaps and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so no, actually, I was thinking, so there's two. Tecmo Koei's Dead or Alive and
Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah, Ninja Gaiden take place in the same universe because Ayame and what's the ninja's name? I'm blanking on it now.
Ryu Hayabusa.
Yeah, they show up in both games, and I think after the reboot, I think the first two games of the Ninja Gaiden reboot happen, and then it's the DOA games based on the age of the characters. But the big one is Capcom, who. In I'm not sure which games universe you would consider it to be first because the order at which the games came out, I guess. So you have Street Fighter, which shares a universe with Final Fight.
Final Fight was originally going to be called Street Fighter 89 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like it was kind of a sort of a sequel to Street Fighter, but the difference being that, you know, it would be an action, not a one-on-one fighting game, it would be a brawler. But then they decided that, even though Street Fighter generally seems more
it's
descriptive
described that game
of
much
Final
better, and
Fight
Final Fight
than it
describes
is,
Street Fighter pretty well, actually.
Yeah. Mm. but like Hagger was in the original Street Fighter as well, wasn't he, or something?
And then he became the mayor of Metro City, where some of Street Fighter's story, you know, in the more like canonical comics and stuff, has taken place. Because Metro City is an actual place that exists in the Street Fighter universe, but that's not the only thing in the Street Fighter universe. There is a wrestling arcade game that Capcom put out a couple of called Saturday Night Slam Masters. That takes place in the Street Fighter universe. And in fact, again, features a handful of characters from both. A lot of times you'll see characters from Street Fighter games hanging out in the audience.
Hagar is in that game.
Yeah, he is.
Yep.
This game is interesting a little bit because it's done by the Fist of the North Star artist. So like the art is way not Capcom in the most beautiful and ridiculous and maybe vaguely homoerotic ways. It's fantastic. And then also not done yet, Rival Schools takes place in the Street Fighter universe, which is another fighting game that Capcom made. I want to say it started around the PlayStation era.
They're
3D fighting games. That was Capcom's sort of like foray into 3D. You know, they made the games with Eureka, the Street Fighter EX games. These are like high school kids who basically at different schools have powers in Aoharu City, and they just beat the shit out of each other. It's basically like a bunch of different schools have a couple fighters, and they're fighting to be the toughest high school in the city. But again, takes place in universe, and I want to say, Sakura shows up in this one. In terms of like the most interconnected stuff, that's probably the most any company has done.
I think it's, you know, what Brian is talking about. You do feel like it's something that in some boardroom somewhere is getting discussed.
Oh,
because it's getting pretty sort of lurid in the movie now with the success of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, we've got a conjuring cinematic
failure
universe
at this point. DC Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, we've got a whole bunch of films that are connected to The Conjuring that came out.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
they're cheap to make. They make
If
they
that's
going to
be the... You know, just that we're like, you know what? We could turn this
Annabelle
into
3, Conjuring 11. Yeah, we're at that phase.
We could turn this into, you know, its own universe or whatever. I mean, there's really no limit to it. So, you would have thought... Somebody somewhere some big publisher is thinking, yeah, we need to get a piece of this action, basically.
So my favorite on this in the film, Ghostbusters was a disaster. Like it maybe kind of broke even, but primarily because they sold the naming rights to every fucking thing in that movie possible. But the infamous story on that one is they thought they would make their money in China, and nobody bothered to check if the censors would let a movie about ghosts come out in China, which, by the way, they won't. But they set up a whole studio, like a whole, like, I can't remember what they call it, Ghost Squad Productions or some shit like that, spent tons and tons of money on it, and then they're never going to make another movie out of that studio. Like, it was their whole plan to launch a cinematic universe out of it, and, like, immediate fucking flame out. But that's not even the worst one, because Universal tried to launch their Movie Monsters cinematic universe. They've tried
the
to launch
world.
It. Yes, they've tried to launch it multiple times and have pulled movies out of the continuity because they did poorly, and then made new movies to replace them. It's fucking amazing. And every single one of these movies that comes out in their The Dark World cinematic universe bombs worse than the last one.
Kind of putting the card before the horses, you know.
Yeah, like make one good movie and then proceed. They put Tom Cruise in the Mummy one primarily because they wanted to have one of them do well, and it did even worse. So, like, good job by everybody. I mean, the only one that's really working, like really effectively working, is, I mean, You could argue that Star Wars has reached a point where Disney's commoditized it so much that it's effectively a cinematic universe.
Oh, that's the idea. That's why they bought it, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, they've really ridden Marvel to the point of just complete breakdown. But like beyond that, there's not a ton of success out there. Like DC has had a couple movies that do well, but in general, the movies aren't well regarded. They don't perform particularly well.
Yeah, but it's not as if they're leaving the approach behind, though, isn't it? I mean, they're still trying. So that's what I'm saying. It's just, yeah.
Did you want another Joker origin story movie? I bet you did.
When you have the success on the scale, you know, and the sort of dependability that the Marvel movies seem to have, it just appeals to the corporate mindset.
It does, and you can cut some of your like idea germination down. You don't have to try to come up with new concepts. The problem, I guess, is primarily one of like, how do you make it work? Ubisoft, being Ubisoft, is sort of the first company I would jump to mentally. But a lot of their franchises have licenses tied to them. And, you know, all the rules around that make it like you can't have Sam Fisher show up in an Assassin's Creed game, because Sam Fisher as a character is owned by the Tom Clancy estate. So, or at the very least, the Tom Clancy estate probably has some degree of control over what can and can't happen with him. And I, and as much as they've pushed Tom Clancy stuff into the realm of just ridiculousness, I think VR assassin time travelers might be the breaking point for the estate.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Clancy right now is pretty much anything with guns.
Yeah.
That's really Tom Clancy now.
Pretty much. You know, like the one where you're basically running down drug cartels. Mm-hmm. We could put Rabbids in that. There it is. That's the cinematic universe crossover. Tom Clancy, drug cartel, assassin, Rabbids. Done.
But again, Spencer saw Rabbids is a thing, so it's kind of already, it already exists.
Yeah, the crossover the crossover stuff. Like, again, that's why Brian draws the distinction between just like crossovers, you know, like Smash Brothers, like, you know, Tatsunoko versus Capcom, or, you know, but all this kind of stuff. But, you know, an actual, you know, where it's like, okay, continuity is going to mean something here, you know, and that is, I would imagine one of the bigger obstacles, I guess, is that with game, the logistics on, you know, making games and having all that kind of continuity. I mean, imagine it's a lot of work for the Marvel people with all the movies they create. But
and they're being written by different people too, which is
I mean, that is not an easy task. I mean, I'm sure, even though, you know, clearly it's worth the money to do it, but you know, with games, I could imagine it'd be even more difficult logistically.
I mean, I think the thing is, you have to have your Avengers game. Like, you have to have your game that has the crossover. And I think that's where your Rabbids plus Tom Clancy drug cartel shoot-ups plus Assassin's Creed comes in. And then they take that continuity from those games, from that crossover game, and then build it out. So you have the Rabbids who have gotten really, really into cocaine. Like, really into cocaine. And you have a whole game about that. And like, I don't know like what you'd call that game. Rabbids Go Home actually would have been a great title for that game. And unfortunately, that's already in use. But yeah, there's not really an option here. Like, because EA doesn't have a bunch of story-driven games. They've got the stuff out of BioWare, although that takes forever to make. And you can't cross over Dragon Age and Mass Effect.
Not with that attitude.
Well, not with the skill that was shown in the last Mass Effect either. So, and EA again, like it's, you're gonna have an NHL. No. I want an NHL MLB crossover game. I want that. Cinematic universe.
But the bats and the hockey sticks are made from lasers.
You know, you're basically describing a game from the 90s. I just can't think of its name. But you're really close. It would be hard. It would almost have to be a Japanese company or like an indie game company. Because there's just not a bunch of big, like, consistent, plot-driven... I mean...
It would have to be... I don't know. Like, it could be EA because they've bought so many developers. They've got so many franchises.
Them.
Yeah, I know. But they have the franchises. They own the rights, so they could do it. But, like, EA is the, I guess, like, one of the closest things to Disney that we have in the video game world. Other than that, there would be Disney, like, if they got more into games. Like, they could buy every freaking franchise and just do something with it.
They just don't have...
They just kind of, you know, just gave... EA Star Wars to right. you know to do with what
take it.
You
know. Well, I mean, write us a big check and take it.
No, sure.
they just don't have. There's just not somebody out there who I think has the collection of properties that it makes sense in.
Yeah, so it's because the problem, like, so with Nintendo, you know, people might equate with Disney in certain respects and things. As a video game equivalent, it just. There's no internal continuity within like even a single game.
Or Fire Emblem is literally the only series they have that's trying to tell an story.
And I mean Fire Emblem a lot of times is like you know sort of the same world but thousands of years later.
Yeah, it's like it was 76,000 years later.
You know, so it's kind of loose there, and Zelda, it's loose and all. But,
yeah,
you know, they just don't really care that much about that sort of thing. They certainly wouldn't care to put the sort of effort into like, okay, we're gonna have this sort of your persistent crossover where it is like one universe and everything's good and those connections will be meaningful in some way rather than just, you know, because you've already have, you know, Smash Brothers and these other just sort of casual crossover games have already provided, you know, silly moments like in Smash Brothers Brawl, like, oh, there's Captain Olimar and Captain Falcon together.
There you go.
You know, like, you've already done that. But, you know, what you're talking about here is a, you know, a very, very different kind of, structure that actually, you know, rewards audiences for being invested in these different things and then seeing them come together and all that. It's just, that's not something that Nintendo, I think, would have the capacity to do or any interest in doing.
As much as I would love to see the Wario Yoshi Kirby cinematic universe, where it's just game after game of eating.
The good feel cinematic universe.
It's true. It's just the we'll call it the eating cinematic universe. The gluttony universe. There it is. Yeah. There's just Nintendo doesn't care about what the fuck's the continuity of the Kirby series? Sometimes he's a quill. Sometimes he's in a giant robot. Sometimes I don't know. There's a game coming out this year. We still don't know what the fuck it is.
Sometimes he plays golf with himself.
It's true.
The continuity is friendship.
Yep.
Is
oh, man, there you go.
He eats everything he meets. So I would say the continuity is you are delicious.
He just wants them closer to his heart, James.
To be fair, that is a legitimate point about this new Kirby Go coming out for Switch. Like, this whole thing of, like, oh, you kind of recruit enemies. Like, making them your friends. Like, don't you normally just eat these things wholesale? I don't know.
Look, some people have pet pigs. Doesn't mean they don't like ham. Pigs are apparently very, very, I'm just saying. Pigs are apparently a very, very
what
good
pet. What kind of a saying is that?
It's not a saying, it's
what
truth,
kind of homespun
John.
Wisdom is that? You know?
It's like my grandma always said.
It's a James Jones original, John.
It's a James Jones Virginia original right there.
From the phrase book of Mason Verger from Hannibal, probably.
Ham is delicious, and pig, like little like teacup pigs, are adorable. What's your point?
Man, James, sometimes I wonder about you, man.
Just sometimes.
Man.
All right, let's move on to the next email so we can all wonder together.
Sure. Jonathan writes, so now that the voice chat app has launched to widespread using something besides the voice chat app, and Splatoon 2 has launched to widespread, I don't understand why they insist on doing it this way. How long does Nintendo have after people start paying for this abuse before it becomes utterly inexcusable? I don't imagine they'll suddenly fix things in time for the paid launch when they blatantly ignored universal 5 to 10 year old solutions the first time around. I always hoped that once they announced a paid service, they'd start taking online seriously, but to be honest, it doesn't seem like reality is currently tracking in that direction. Follow-up question, what's the sign for each of you that Nintendo's finally taking online play seriously? For me, it would be online play in all future quote-unquote mainline Mario games, exactly as if the players were in the same living room.
Oh, that sounds miserable.
I mean, for me, it would be system-wide voice chat.
That would be something.
Let's say they did voice chat, but it wasn't system-wide. There is built-in voice chat. Is that not enough?
I mean, that's what they're doing now,
Pokemon.
I'm saying consistently did voice chat. Not like that bullshit time where I once had a PR rep tell me to my face about camera, was it live, a video camera, if you're over local connection. I'm like, wait, if I'm in the same room with them, I can look at them on a camera is what you're telling me.
That's Star Fox 64.
It is. I asked him to explain it again, and I was like, you're telling me there's local video chat? Yes, there is. We're having it right now.
It's already too late for consistent every game has voice chat, because, I mean, like, the online app has come out, and the only game that's compatible with it is Splatoon 2.
Well, I'm saying
despite
going
the fact that ARMS is a thing, Mario Kart 8 is a thing, they didn't add those in. It makes no sense.
But what I'm saying is, if let's say it wasn't like the phone thing, it was voice chat from the console, but it was in the game, so you had to actually go into the game and launch it. Would you feel like they're taking it at least somewhat seriously there, John? Or has it got to be system level?
I mean, I don't really care about how it's implemented. I mean, that's kind of splitting hairs, I guess.
I
mean, if they had voice chat, if they made voice chat mandatory in every game, yes. Implementing it on a per game basis is just incredibly dumb.
What if they implemented it for every game, but you had to have a smartwatch that you put to your ear?
You had to have a Fitbit.
I couldn't even get it out.
And you had to be jogging on your Fitbit in order for a chat to be activated.
Yes. It's like those treadmills that had the TV built in. You had to keep walking to get it to stay on.
Actually, let me retract that. If they did it per game, I still wouldn't think that's actually taking it seriously, because they've been doing that for years. And doing it for every game instead of a few games isn't really taking it seriously. Ooh. It's actually making it part of their platform.
What if they only did it in Mario Party games? But they put out a Mario Party game every 6 months.
Yeah.
I is a serious answer. I don't know what Nintendo taking online seriously even fucking means. Like, that's the point we hit to.
I mean, that's the pay Rubicon has always been, you know, that has been like, you know, well, the line that they had not, you know, dared to cross up until, you know, now. And so you always wondered, you know, how much different things would be, you know, if and when they decided that they were going to cross that line. I guess the question, you know, how different is it going to be? I mean, in terms of the app and all, I haven't used it myself. I have no idea.
It's not very good.
How bad it is, or whatever, how salvageable it is in the next few months or whatever. The feasibility of that component of it. But I do wonder, you know, part of it, like, if you look at the cost, you know, what they're proposing to charge is not a great deal. And presumably there will be, you know, as has been talked about, you know, the access to a library of games, classic games, with online features and things. So, you know, some as a value proposition, some people may feel like, well, you're kind of paying for that more than you are paying for the online play. I still don't see that yeah, I kind of agree with Jonathan in that I'm not sure that them finally going to pay is the watershed moment that perhaps hypothetically you thought it might be years
right.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I just you know, like the whole offering some titles for your subscription and having online play is fine, but I kind of doubt the viability of yeah, like Super Nintendo Online as a thing that's gonna really catch on, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I think of, I don't know, like it seems like maybe like that system was meant to be played couch co-op. I don't know what makes me think that, but yeah, like it was meant to be played for with someone in the same room, mm-hmm. and
it'll be neat.
Yeah, like that's the best
sure.
I can say about it. It'll be neat.
Sure, but I don't know. Like I think that online games usually are designed in a way that at least tries to level the playing field a little bit in a way that more old school games did not. And I don't know. Like you just have to try to go online and Dr. Mario to get your ass handed to you by like you know like someone's mom.
Oh yeah,
and,
like
you realize like oh shit,
Puyo Tetris
I know
online
nothing.
Is a nightmare.
Yeah, like yeah. And it's the same thing with like Street Fighter. Like unless you've been yeah. playing that game for the past 25 years continuously, yeah, there's no way that you're gonna be really all
yeah,
that good at
I mean-
it.
There's no matchmaking built mm-hmm. into that or any way to matchmake people or determine people's rankings. So you're just going to, like Guillaume said, you're just going to play somebody who could probably just kick your ass.
What if you could only play with people who you have Miitomo friends with?
There's a whole lot of what ifs coming out of you, James. And I think they're all dubious.
Yeah, you're really grasping
well,
there.
I have some bad news for you, Guillaume. I'm not grasping. That pretty much is how you had to have people switch friends at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really
yeah,
was like, oh, you've connected with them via our mobile apps. And I was like, are you fucking what?
Yeah,
oh, you're
I mean,
both friends on you're both friends on Twitter with each other, so you can add them via the mobile app, and then because you're on the mobile app, you can add them via Switch, and it was like this fucking like block sliding block puzzle of friend adding. It's awful.
You know, I can't help but think that with this whole like $20 a year thing, it's almost like it's almost like Nintendo is saying, okay, well, it's almost like they're setting themselves up to be able to say, well, you're only paying $20 a year. That's why it sucks.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's what I was saying earlier on is that you're only paying $20 and you're getting access to some old games with added functionality. Like, so, you know, how much are you paying for the actual online part of it? You know, the actual you're being able to access your play Splatoon matches and whatever.
I mean,
leaving voice chat out of it, just actually playing games online.
I mean, let's be honest. The reason why they're doing this isn't just the pure cash grab of it, although certainly. It's part of it.
Yeah, there's a fair bit of that because it's just they know there's Nintendo loyalists that have been ready to give them money for this sort of thing for years.
But they also
other companies have this kind of revenue stream and they're not getting it.
But they also have the stats that from the other companies and their investor announcements is that the people who pay for those services spend more otherwise in their digital storefronts.
Mm-hmm.
Which of course is what Nintendo wants. I mean, it's hard to escape the prospect that the Switch was designed to try to make you a digital only gamer. Like there is this weird sense of like, well, sometimes the game is going to cost more money because of our cartridge design, and you want to have this game with you on the go at all times, right? Which of course is where Nintendo makes more bank on the game. So I mean, this is obviously a part of it. The fact that they know that if you're buying your game, if you're paying for a digital service, you're gonna spend more on digital games.
Yeah, and they can hook you in with, like, oh, we'll give you a subscriber exclusive deals
right.
and all that
yeah.
kind of stuff. Yeah. Usual tricks.
Yeah. But, I mean to give a serious answer, not like you have to tap three times on the Switch and it sends Morse code signals to the person.
You had
the other
to throw
side.
One more what if in there, didn't you?
like,
to be serious now, but let me finish with a completely ridiculous example one more time.
So the best I can say for Nintendo is taking online seriously, and it goes back to my statement of I don't necessarily understand what serious means for Nintendo, is if, and he kind of touches on it, is if, you know, any game that was multiplayer had online multiplayer if possible. You know, the big example is, like, we've never had online multiplayer in a Mario Party game. We just haven't. The closest we had was we had online multiplayer in, was it in a Itagaki, or was it Itagaki Street had it? That was it. Like, they never went and did it. And it's like, why? Why is there no online multiplayer in this? I mean, it's fucking dice rolls. They don't have to be super duper in sync. You can build the mini games in such a way that the ones you play online aren't necessarily worried about latency. Like, this doesn't have to be like this, but it was like this, and that was what Nintendo did, and we never got that. But there's no reason why. I mean, you could certainly have that as a game out there, and people seem to buy those games for some ungodly reason. So seeing at least a commitment that, yes, our multiplayer games will be online would be a step in the right direction. Because, I mean, I don't live with anybody else, because no one would ever bother to live with me. So if I wanted to play Mario Party, I have to play it single player. And that's really,
It's doable, but it's sad.
You could do it, but I mean, you can also, like, jump off buildings. It's not advisable, you know, but you can. Like, I wouldn't.
No, I mean, that would be a big change, because regularly they decline.
Right.
The option to go with online multiplayer. You know, I mean, and in fact, they've sort of gone backwards in a number of cases. I mean, you might remember something like Star Fox Command on DS had a multiplayer kind of deathmatchy thing, but then Star Fox 64 3D had the aforementioned video chat local
video chat,
but no, you know, online battles and stuff. So, you know, it just seemed. You know, like they did actually. You know, I talked about Pokemon having voice chat and stuff, like on DS. Like they seemed to make when it was really their first foray into that arena, they seemed to kind of apply, you know, go more broad. You know, with all, you know, obviously Mario Kart was the flagship that kind of started it, but then you did have things like Star Fox, Pokemon, all these different stuff, and then. It seems like as time's gone on, as time went on, you know, they looked at it more on a kind of ad hoc basis and said, well, you know, is it really worth it in this case? You know, we've had experience, we've seen what the take-up is of this particular kind of experience. I just thought, you know what, it's not worth the development costs it takes to get that right and then maintaining it and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's very difficult to see them kind of reversing that way of thinking and say, oh no, now we're not going to do it on a case-by-case basis. We're going to say it's got to be right across the board, especially when so much of their, you know, general kind of appeal, but certainly, you know, with the specific appeal of the Switch is, you know, the versatility of being able to play it with people in your presence.
And I think Nintendo, with their commitment to local co-op, would never pull like we had with last generation, where we had games that just simply historically series were, you know, multi co-op and they became multi only.
What Guillaume was saying earlier on, you know, while Nintendo was, you know, sort of making its way into online, you had, you know, the other platform, well, games on the other platforms, you know, making very different decisions of saying, like, well, you know, it's not worth our while to you know, go to the effort of having to do split screen and all that kind of thing. So, you know, there is a rival. That's the thing. I mean, there is a rivalry to some extent with development resources. You know, they are scarce, and you've got to look at what your game is meant to do and to prioritize accordingly. And so that's where, you know, platform-wide sort of diktats are not, you know, necessarily a great thing.
Yeah, I don't know that necessarily needs to be like stone tablets coming down the mountain, but just for them to consistently include multiplayer in these games would be a change. And I think the other bullshit that we put up with them, you know, that if you want to communicate, you need to tie it to a pigeon and then email that pigeon to the other person so they can hear your voice as a real media audio file. I think, like, the bullshit there would eventually, it would be such a pain in the ass for them themselves that they would start to fix that shit. That, like, it would get to the point where having to communicate through telepathy just wasn't an option anymore, and they would go do stuff themselves and actually fix their fucking platform because so many of their games would be leveraging it.
I mean, the one thing I'll say, you know, to be fair, I think, I don't know whether it's the line that Jonathan's looking for, but I think it is a significant one, is just the fact that they have embraced a game like Splatoon that is just so contingent on online. You know, it's not just like, okay, Mario Kart is this thing that exists before they even went online, and then DS comes along and it's like, well, you can still play local, you can still play Grand Prix, but now you can play online too. You know, Splatoon is a game that was conceived and designed and everything around playing it online from the ground up.
I would point out, though, they still put single player and at least on the Wii U one, a fucking strange, like, local multiplayer mode.
Yeah, really half-assed local multiplayer mode.
Like, they still felt like, well, this is a Nintendo game, it's got to be in here.
Yeah, well, no, especially guys with the way the Wii U was positioned, right. You know, that they felt that was important. But point is, yeah, they have crossed, because at one point you might wonder, you know, whether they would do something like that, you know, where it's like, okay, it's not just something where online would be a cool thing to have in a sort of structure that already exists. It is the structure. It's the foundation of
this.
It
is a game as a service.
The fact that they've been willing to go there with Splatoon, and then the fact that it has found an audience, that it's been successful, you know, I mean, you look, the second one is, you know, somewhat predictably, I mean, I think we all thought it was going to do great in Japan, but you see how fast how quickly it's outstripping the other big hitters on Switch. It's already hit a million.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't it something like 75% of players in Japan have it?
Yes.
It's definitely around 2/3 or more. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because there's only a million and a half Switches somewhere in that region in Japan, which is, you know, a good pace, but they probably could have sold more. So the point is, I mean, the fact that they've you know, it's a series, you know, it's an ongoing series now. We've had two games, it's successful, and you know, they've got they put their sort of muscle behind it in terms of marketing and providing updates and all this stff. Around a game that is primarily reliant on online play, you know, as it's sort of to enjoy it. So that's a big line that they crossed there. Now,
and did they make a second game, they went and made a second series with ARMS, which is even more heavily online leveraged.
Yeah, which is kind of like, yeah, it's sort of another game in that vein. Yeah, like, obviously it's different mechanically, but in terms of the way you're gonna, you know, use it is similarly very much based on online, very much based on getting new content for free, you know, as it goes along. You've got the new character Lola Pop coming up next.
Jesus Christ!
You know, like, you know, so no, I mean, exactly that model was clearly successful enough that not only did you get Splatoon 2, you get a different game, you know, series that they're trying to get started using much the same model. So I think that's a pretty big line that they crossed there. Now, what would have been nice to go along with that is to say, well, at least for these games, we are going to take it extremely seriously.
Right.
And, you know, like, really, you know, have the full suite of communication options and everything. Like, at least, you know, for these sort of little sort of pockets that are of Nintendo gaming that are so dependent on online. But yeah, we're still not there yet. And as we've said, I'm not convinced that the pay threshold is going to deliver it, but we'll see, you know, because as Guillaume said, I mean, it's just really odd that we've got that they've only done the first Splatoon so far.
You go on the app and you get like the top half is red and it says online, and it's a link to a tutorial how to invite friends.
Yeah, it's clearly meant to absorb more games.
Yeah, but and then the bottom half is game specific services, and there's an icon for Splatoon 2, and that's it.
Yeah, so I mean, it just feels like at the minute they really are doing the absolute bare minimum, because it's like, well, we have to have this in place for Splatoon 2, because you know, but you know, seemingly it just wasn't ready for prime time, basically. But you know, they had to have something, you know, for Splatoon 2, and so even, you know, adding this sort of, you know, this apparently imperfect functionality to games, it would also make sense, like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and ARMS, hasn't been done yet. So I don't know what that does. That say that the situation is even like more irretrievable than we think, or does it just say this is a work in progress and it will get better? And
I don't believe that though. I mean, because
better. I don't think it'll get passable.
The thing is with Nintendo is that, you know, people say, oh, well, this is you know, a prelude to something larger. And it's like, philosophically, I have never seen in the last 15 years that Nintendo has really given a shit about having system-wide voice chat ever in any way, shape, or form. There's no evidence.
No,
there's no evidence in the past.
No, because they've never
done it. There's no evidence right now. There's no evidence in the future. Hmm. So I expect
the Wii Speak, John. The Wii Speak was the evidence.
I think that, you know, like there was a, when the GameCube was a thing, there was a perception that connectivity was being worked on instead of online. So what if they subverted expectations and allowed you to connect your 3DS or DS to your Switch and use the mic of that thing for voice chat?
But only a large DS. Switch?
And so connectivity and online becomes the same thing.
I don't mean like the gray slate. I mean a launch day, Easter time DS. Like it had to be bought within the first week of the system sale.
Oh, sure. You're saying what the DS fat? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you've got actually have the Metroid the Metroid Prime Hunters demo cartridge in it for it to work.
You have to connect through the Metroid Prime Hunters demo, and that's the only way you can play it.
Yeah,
I mean that. Actually, I guess that's one of the earlier examples of a game that was seemed like it was pretty damn predicated on the online component of it.
True. Yeah. The single player was just perfunctory. Like it was.
I'm not even sure I would give it that much of a title. It was perfunctory for perfunctory's sake.
It was there, and you fought the same. Well, two bosses, four times each.
The illusion of perfunctory is probably the best way to describe.
But you know the it was pretty robust in a lot of departments for back then, you know, for online Nintendo.
Especially for a portable game.
Yeah, you know, we think of you know the voice chat and all that. They had Rumble support with that.
Oh my god!
I'm sure it must have been fun until people learned how to cheat this game that can't be patched.
And that was a big problem. You know, back in the earlier days of, we didn't get patches for, you know, kind of game for Nintendo Online stuff until Mario Kart 7. I want to say
something like that.
When they remember that woohoo glitch that everybody abused,
right?
And so like everyone would vote for that track, everyone. And it just, oh God, it was so terrible. And then it gets passed, and a bunch of people are still voting for it. And on the one hand, I'm kind of like, haha, yeah, you won't be able to do the skip thing anymore. And on the other hand, I'm like, I'm still racing on this fucking course.
Well, I mean, there is some hope in that maybe things get better. Maybe you all have to go find a copy of the Metroid Prime Hunters demo, and my two copies of it will become more valuable.
Maybe bring back Ping Pals.
Always bring back Ping Pals, John.
I would say if you've got games like Splatoon 2 that so leverage online that they are, and you've got a pay service, they have kind of crossed the obvious lines there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But if they still haven't actually delivered a service that suggests, you know, they're taking it with the utmost sort of seriousness, I'm not sure what the benchmark is after that.
You know,
guarantee it.
I don't think
the Mario thing that Jonathan mentions. If they did that, I think you sure as shit would take it as a sign they're taking it seriously. But I don't see them doing it. So
right.
You know that I'm trying to think of a benchmark that I do see as more plausible or immediate.
Well, John. Good news for you is that WayForward is still around to make Ping Pals 2, and I know THQ's properties went up for sale, so somebody probably has them.
Yeah, it blows me away that WayForward made that game.
Does it?
Quote unquote game. Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, they made some really good stuff.
Yeah, they've made some really good games. They've also made some really not good games.
They've talked about the making of that thing, and it was what they were asked to make, apparently.
It was a mistake.
Well, sure.
They made plenty of licensed games. Or, I mean, they just, you know, they have to keep the lights on.
Way forward got to eat, James. You know?
Wait for it. Ping got a pal, John.
Ping got a pal.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for the show this week. You can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com and hear us get self-indulgent by bringing up things totally unrelated, like ping pals, in the context of your email. Thanks to everyone who sent us emails this week. Greg, what is our song to close out the show?
Well, just hearing a bit of the Mario Plus Rabbids soundtrack today, where I thought it was going to full-blown launch into Freezeezy Peak.
Banjo's just going to walk on screen.
I thought, well, you know, I was thinking about it and realized we haven't done anything from a banjo game in the couple of years
really
that we're doing these outro music. No, we haven't. We did a ukulele request.
Oh, yeah.
But first of all, this ukulele, you know, modern, you know, different. But second of all, that was one of David Wise's contributions to that soundtrack. So not Kirk Hope, not the classic banjo style soundtrack.
I assume stuff, yeah.
Does exist in ukulele somewhere. But yeah, this I thought, let's just go straight back to the source. Yeah, just hearing those first few notes of Freezeezy Peak in my head, I thought, let's do that, which was a hell of a lot of fun back with the N64 Banjo. I assume you're going to be playing Spectrum games for like the next 3 years before get to that.
No, I made it through the Spectrum games. So, yeah, my next one up is Blast Corps. I had to delay a little bit because the microphone I use is off for warranty work. But, yeah, it's Blast Corps up next. I've escaped the Spectrum, and it's fucking best puzzle game 1984. Like, they really, if Rare was a little bit more willing to make fun of themselves, more willing to make fun of themselves than an entire dumpster full of Grab by the Ghoulies, they would have just said best puzzle game 1984 and then listed their games and then runner up as one of their games and second runner up as one of their games. It just owned it. But they didn't. Yeah, it sounds like that was an award worth winning.
So maybe you'll get to this soon enough and have one of those more critical kind of looks at it. like we just did with Sunshine, but the music is still fun. I can pretty much guarantee that, so I hope everyone agrees.
Jet Force Gemini Retroactive up next. Jesus, I can't even get that one out without feeling sick. All right, bye everybody.
Bye.
Later.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you.